This is Stand to Reason's hashtag STRAsk podcast. I'm Amy Hall, and I'm here with Greg Kokel, and we're here to answer your questions. So we appreciate you sending those questions in on Twitter with the hashtag STRAsk. Greg.
Yes, Amos.
So these first two questions are very similar. So I'll ask the first one, and then we'll go on to the second one.
Okay. But
the first one comes – oh, and it's also – you had a kind of a similar question on November 15th because we were asked – should you pray for your sufferings to end or just that they would accomplish their purpose? And you said you do both. So here is a question that's somewhat similar. This one comes from Mo. God often uses one wicked nation to judge another, or sometimes he uses its own wicked leaders. How do we know when to fight the evil we see around us and when to just resign ourselves to God's judgment?
Oh, well, that's an interesting question. I pause because I'm trying to figure out the best way to position my attitude. So let me back up a little bit. I actually think that most of the things that we are responsible to do are fairly basic and simple, and God kind of takes care of the rest, all right? So I think our responsibility is as citizens is to promote a just society, all right? God gave government for the punishment of evildoers and the praise of those who do good, okay? So it's our job to promote a just society that the government accomplishes that particular goal. If you read in the book of Proverbs, for example, there are lots of Proverbs that talk about the prosperity of a nation when the righteous rule or righteous principles are ruling. But when the wicked rule, this is not good, okay? So that's actually kind of pretty obvious, but I think it's in other words, the writer of Proverbs is not telling us anything new. I think it's an encouragement to pursue those kinds of societies, all right? So insofar as we are able, we do that, all right? Now, we can't control all these things. There's all kinds of things we can't control. There are lots of things in our society right now. The more I read what I see happening on a political basis, the more disconcerting it becomes. I've written this past year, 2021, a lot about encroaching totalitarianism, okay? Now, of course, this has been happening at an unbelievable rate in our country, especially it's dramatic in light of the fact that we have a history of freedom and liberty, all right? And now these are rapidly being taken away from us. And the rule of law is being undermined and the democratic process is being assaulted and all kinds of things are crazy things are going on. So there's two things here. There's God's part and there's my part. Whether or not God allows a wicked system to continue to flourish, and this is what's been happening in the last number of years, wickedness has been flourishing. And we have reprieves, but still, and when I say wickedness has been flourishing, I'm not trying to identify individual human beings. That's a wicked person. I'm looking at trends and policies. That's what I'm looking at. Trends and policies. Of course, individual people are responsible for those trends and policies, but I'm not picking on people right now. I'm looking at trends. We have wickedness. Wickedness flowing vigorously everywhere. All of the principles that God has laid down for human living and human flourishing are being violated everywhere we turn. Okay? So what do we do about it? Well, we seek to live righteously. One of the guidelines from the title of a book, Live Not by Lies. I talked about that last year. Rod Dreher. Well, we may not be able to stop the system from going where it's going, but we can choose not to live according to the lie. So as Christians, before God, we live individually according to the truth. All right. I don't think we ever accept the evil that prevails. We may have to live with it and understand God's sovereignty and allowing it for his purposes, but it doesn't mean we don't fight it. I don't think we get to a point and say, okay, let me just go back to the Third Reich because I'm on a 1,000-page, I'm at almost page 1,000 in The Rise and Fall. It's really amazing, this book, especially in light of the trends I see now. But in any event, the Christians in that environment, this book doesn't speak about the Christians in particular, but it does speak about those who sought to resist what Hitler was doing in different fashions. There are lots of plots to get rid of Hitler. Rommel, one of their greatest generals, had to commit suicide because of his commitment to a plot to do away with Hitler. But so even though all this evil was happening, the good people saw the evil. They weren't willing to totally give up and just give in and say, oh, well, this is just God's will. No, it may be God's purposes to allow evil for whatever his purposes are, but that's on his side of the ledger. Our job is to oppose it as we're able, okay? To live righteously and then stand up and say no to the unrighteousness when it happens, like Corrie ten Boom, for example, and other righteous Gentiles who saved Jews. So I don't have a fatalistic view here. We are to live lives of truth as much as we're able, even with restrictions that we see with the government, and that's not always easy to do. And we are to pray for God's kingdom to come. So his will is done on earth as it is in heaven. This is the Lord's Prayer, and I pray this. I pray this with regards to our country. So, but in the midst of the hardship and suffering, then we have to learn to endure what we can't change and what God has chosen not to change for the season. Amy, I think you're muted. I can't hear you.
Sorry about that, Greg. We do what God has called us to do until God directly tells us to stop. Now, he actually did tell at one point the Israelites to stop when he said that the Babylonians are coming.
That's right.
You should just go out to them, stop resisting. He actually did that one time. But we can't read his mind. We're not supposed to do that. We're just supposed to do what he has called us to do, what he has told us to do, until he tells us to stop. And this reminded me of a verse, Deuteronomy 29:29. The secret things belong to the Lord our God, but the things revealed belong to us and our sons forever, that we may observe all the words of this law. We don't have to figure out what God's doing. We do what we are supposed to do.
Right.
So here is a related question from TJ. Where should we draw the line between enduring suffering and resolving it? Many of the scriptures I have found on suffering point out the positive things it produces. It seems that the view of many people is to end suffering through means of technological and financial advances. I see that praying for our suffering to end is a worthy cause, but how far should our own actions go to end/lessen suffering? And then he gives examples, CRISPR, IVF, etc.
CRISPR? You know?
CRISPR is the gene editing.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
So a couple things come to mind. The first thing that came to mind is persecution. And if you look in the book of Acts and even in the Gospels, the apostles and Jesus first in the Gospels fled persecution when they were able to. They fled it. What? Jesus did? Yeah. The first thing he did is went to Egypt. Joseph took him to Egypt, right? Because his life was in danger. But there are a number of occasions when the Jews were going to, you know, stone him, push him off the brow of the cliff, and then he got away. Other times they knew there was danger and he didn't go. And this is clear in the narrative, all right? So in Jesus' habits, he avoided persecution when he could. And the apostles did the same thing. Paul in Damascus was lowered over a wall. There was a lot of persecution when he's a new believer, and they lowered him in a basket over the wall to get away. And there are a number of occasions in the book of Acts where they did this. So fleeing the hardship is fully legitimate if you're able. Sometimes you're not able. Now, the second thing I thought of was Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. What would Jesus pray? He prayed, Lord, take this cup from me. So there, Jesus is expressly requesting a removal of suffering. Now, he understood, though, as he's expressing his own, in a certain sense, emotions, he knew that this wasn't really an option. That's why he said, not my will, but thine be done. My will, what I want, I don't want to go through this. But I know this is your plan, and I submit to your will. So there's a good picture of that balance there. Notice Jesus is expressing a prayer to avoid the suffering and then expressing a willingness of embracing the suffering that he must embrace. Now, in my own personal life, there are lots of things that have been very painful for me that I have tried to pray away. And most of them I have not been able to do. And think of Paul in the thorn in the flesh, which I think was a person. Normally, that's the way we use the phrase anyway. Oh, that person's what a thorn, man, in my side. And I think it was a person in Paul's circumstance. But in any event, there is an example that Paul prayed to get away from the problem, and God says, no, I'm not going to take this away. I'm going to perfect my power within you in the midst of it. And for many of us, this is what we're faced with. And so I think there is a combination of a prayer to avoid the suffering. There's nothing wrong with that. And we don't know what God's purposes are for any suffering. And this goes back to, I think, an earlier question. God has his part. We have our part. We can ask for what we want. But until we get what we want, then we live with what we have in a trusting relationship with the Father. Romans chapter 1, I just read it earlier this week. And there is Paul in chapter 1 talking about wanting to go to visit the Roman Christians, but he's being prevented. He wants to go there. It's a good thing. He wants to accomplish a certain end, and he explains his reasons why. Bearing fruit in their life, receiving encouragement from him preaching the gospel elsewhere, maybe off to Spain or whatever. But he said, I have been prevented thus far. So here's a circumstance where he knows there's something good to accomplish. Now, this isn't a suffering scenario, but there is a parallel here. He wants one thing that God isn't giving him. And so he continues to press on and pray for it, as he puts it, if at last, by the will of God, I will succeed in coming to you. And the will of God there is used in the sovereign sense, if God allows it. But in the meantime, he's going to press on, praying and being faithful with what's in front of him that God has allowed for him to do and to have. So we can pray for a change in circumstances and at the same time look to be faithful in the circumstances that remain the same, whether good or bad, whether satisfying or unsatisfying. And so in my case, the things that I've tried to pray away that I haven't been able to pray away, I've sought to grow and benefit power perfected in weakness from enduring those circumstances that aren't being changed according mm-hmm. to my prayer.
And I want to respond to the part of his question that says, but how far should our actions go to end/lessen suffering? And I just want to say that our actions should go as far as they are within the revealed will of God in terms of morality, in terms of wisdom, in all those things. Because what happens is sometimes suffering can cause a kind of desperation where you disregard what God has told us because something seems so important that you set aside these other rules of morality and wisdom in order to get what you want. And I can remember there was one story Alan has written about where a couple was so desperate to have children, they disregarded some of the morality around decisions with IVF, and they ended up with dozens of embryos that they didn't know what to do with. So now they have these children who are frozen, who they created, who are frozen indefinitely, and they don't know what to do. And now they're facing the difficulties of that. So whenever you're trying to alleviate your suffering, you cannot go beyond wisdom and morality in order to alleviate that suffering, mm-hmm. or you're just going to create more problems.
Well, just think of, I think, even more a common example are sexual circumstances. People are lonely. And so whether they're married or single, they're still experiencing loneliness. And so they reach out in inappropriate ways to satisfy at least temporarily that sense of being lonely, that pain that they're experiencing. I think a lot of people have given in to sexual things like homosexuality, for example. And of course, the testimony of this is legion. Testimonies are legion of these things where I finally accepted who I was and now I'm at peace with myself. In other words, what they did is they quit fighting the urge to do the wrong thing, and now they've embraced the wrong thing, and this now feels, okay, now I'm relaxed, now I'm at peace, or whatever. And what they've done is they've given in, they've ended the fight by doing the wrong thing instead of staying mm-hmm. in the fight. And I talked with a group of Christians the other day, and I said, you know, Christianity is not easy. It is not easy to live a virtuous life, faithful life before God, especially when so many things in the culture are dragging us in another direction. And everyone's telling us, do your own thing. Follow your feelings. It's interesting. We watched Star Wars last night, the very first one from 1977. And boy, it's not just the Force, but follow your feelings, Luke. Follow your feelings. Don't use a computer. Follow your feelings. And of course,
trust
this is
your feelings, Luke.
Trust your feelings, Luke. Right. And of course, now this has become so inbred, even in Christian films. Oh, in Lord of the Rings, saw that too about a week ago. You know, what's up with Frodo? Is he still? What does your heart tell you? Ah, yes, my heart tells me he's okay. You know,
great.
It's all this stuff in there. You know.
You bring up a good point. Sometimes doing good is what causes the suffering. Sometimes when you are resisting your sin or when you're living without something that you think you need, you will suffer if you don't satisfy that in a way that's improper. But God tells us so many times in the Bible, I think it's 1 Peter that says this over and over. Suffering for the sake of good is better than suffering when doing bad. In other words, the result of doing bad, the punishment, and the natural results of doing bad are worse than the suffering that will happen when you do good. Peter is very open about the fact that, you know, Jesus suffered for doing good.
Right.
We should expect that to happen to us too, but we need to stay strong because in the end, we will be the ones who are victorious. And that's the point he makes there. He even goes back to talking about Noah when, you know, Noah suffered for doing good. He suffered as he was building the ark and he was being mocked. But in the end, he was the one who emerged victorious in that situation, and he didn't suffer for eternity as the others who had rejected God did.
Yeah, think of this phrase here, Romans 8:18. For I consider the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory that is to be revealed mm-hmm. to us. Now, we see that in 2 Corinthians chapter 4 as well, the momentary light affliction producing an eternal weight of glory. We see that in 1 Peter passages. You know, Jesus kept, he did not revile in return, but kept entrusting himself to him who judges righteously, etc. And we should not revile in return, but bless because we have been made to inherit a blessing. So you see this equation going over and over and over again. But the culture is very much against that. That's why I mentioned this thing like, what does your heart tell you? Follow your feelings, Luke, and these kinds of things. But another phrase that shows up all the time in movies, and just think about this. I couldn't believe it, I saw it in God Is Not Dead 2.
What did you see?
I think there was the line, what does your heart tell you? Something like that. But this other phrase, though, I just want you to be what? What are parents
happy?
Happy. What are parents always telling kids in movies? I just want you to be happy. I just want you to be happy. I just want you to be happy. And what's an interesting contrast to that, and from Hillsdale, I can't remember his first name, A-R-N.
It's Larry?
Larry Arndt, yeah, who's the president of Hillsdale. He said, my children used to say, when they were young, I just want to be happy. And he said, you will never be happy unless you first learn to be good. You will not be happy until you first learn to be good. His point being, I don't want you to be happy as a goal. I want you to be good as a goal. Mm-hmm. Okay? And see, this is very different worlds. If we just are seeking to be happy, now we are tempted to take counsel from our feelings about what we think is going to give us satisfaction in the moment. And these are almost always the wrong decisions. Mm-hmm. It's the worst. It's follow your heart. It's the worst counsel anyone could ever give because our heart is deceitful and wicked and desperately wicked. Who can know it? We sure don't. And so, but I'm going back to these themes of our culture that I think are part of a spiritual dimension that is meant to draw us away from God's goodness and God's good plan. Okay? Follow your heart. Follow your feelings. I just want to be happy over and over and over and over. You do you. We get the whole thing. And then that means we're going to live our self-centered lives, fulfilling what we want instead of living obediently before God and the life that God wants us to live.
Mm-hmm. So there are two things we need to do here. First, we need to learn wisdom, and we learn that from knowing the Bible inside and out, from learning from people who have thought about ethics, who have thought about all these different things. But secondly, we also need to increase our trust in God. We need to believe that he's good. We need to believe that he loves us specifically. Because if you know what God says, if you don't trust that he's good and wise and loving, you're going to waver on whether or not you're going to follow what he said. So I think those two twin things are the things we need to build up when we're going through suffering so that we don't make wrong moves in trying to alleviate that suffering.
Mm-hmm. And the second, I think, is the hardest to do when you're in the middle of it.
Yes.
It's so hard. This is why we need the encouragement of each other to stand tall. God is good and God knows and he's got a plan. There's nothing that he's going to allow to come into your life that hasn't passed through his hands, etc.
And don't wait until you're suffering to start working on this. You can start reading the Bible and figuring out who God is and trusting him in little things before you get to the point where you're put under that kind of pressure in a situation of intense suffering. And start with 1 Peter, because he talks about suffering all the way through that book.
That's right.
And I've mentioned this before, but whenever I read that book, I always think about how it must have affected him, the fact that he denied Jesus and then was forgiven. Because he gave in to fear and fear of suffering, fear of rejection, fear of being harmed, he did the wrong thing. So now he has a lot to say about don't do that. Don't do the wrong thing out of fear of suffering because that it ends up being worse. So 1 Peter is a great place to start for this.
I agree.
Well, thank you, Mo and TJ. And we would love to hear from you. Send us your question on Twitter with the hashtag STRask, or you can go through our website. Just choose I have another question, but make sure you say it's for hashtag STRask or we won't know that's what it's for. So keep it short and we will consider your question. This is Amy Hall and Greg Kokel for Stand to Reason.